This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
House Ag will come to order. Welcome, everybody. Don't forget to turn your cell phones on silent. Welcome all the people on the internet. And another thrilling episode of House Ag and Natural Resources. With that, I would ask the secretary to call roll.
Representative Chase. Excused. Glanzer.
Here.
Lesmeister.
Here.
Livermont.
Here.
Marty. Excuse. Marty.
Marty.
Here.
Talking.
Mullally. Excused.
Talking.
Otten.
Here.
Overwig.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Hoyer. Excused. Wangsness.
Here.
It's his bill.
Yeah, Dink.
Of course.
Here.
Bruner.
Here. We have a quorum present. Would ask for previous minutes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fink.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, heads up on this one. I make a motion that we amend the minutes from the previous meeting on Tuesday, February 18th, under House Bill 1184 and under proponents, remove Aaron Scheibe from the Governor's Office of Economic Development from that list. That's my motion to amend.
Second. Do you want to make a double barrel motion to approve today's minutes, approve last meeting's minutes, and this one too? Sure, you can.
I can after the motion to amend. I probably can.
Okay.
We got to do the motion to amend at least first by itself.
Got it. We have a motion and a second. Everybody understand what we're voting on? You have a sheet in front of you that apparently Mr. Scheibe
he
wasn't here.
He wasn't here.
Click of the wrong button.
So. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. I don't think we needed a roll call on that, did we?
No.
No. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Previous meeting's minutes.
I would move approval of the previous two meeting's minutes.
Got it. We have a motion by Fink, second by Otten.
As amended.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. All those minutes are approved with the changes. Just a reminder, if you wish to testify today, sign in the back on the podium, and pages. You guys want to come up and introduce yourself? Tell us where you're from, where you're going.
My name is Andrea Brandner. I'm a senior at Harrisburg High School, and next year I will be on the equestrian team at SDSU and plan to major in biology.
Good jazz.
Are you related to anybody here?
No.
Okay.
My name's Caitlin Wimberg. I'm from Canova, South Dakota, and I go to McCook Central, and next year I'm planning on going to SDSU for environmental science.
Well, welcome. Glad you guys are here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
A point of order with the first page.
Point of order, go ahead.
Early, and you may not have a place to stay next week. But that one does belong to me.
But it was well played.
Yes, this is my youngest, so.
Representative Otten, would you like a personal privilege to introduce anybody from your family that might be here?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to introduce my youngest stepdaughter, Andrea Bradner, who is paging this week and next week. And as you all heard, she will be going to SDSU to be on the equestrian team, and horses are her passion. And she's a smart young lady, and I'm glad she's up here.
It's great.
Thank you.
And she was smart enough not to acknowledge you, so hey, there you go.
Mr. Chair, quick question. I was just wondering, when you were given your future plans, why you didn't say that your stepfather would, your plan is to have him pay for all of your education.
Oh, how generous of him. Oh, that's a great stepfather. Man, wish you could probably adopt my kids. So, thank you, everybody. With that, we've got just one bill on our agenda today, and I think we might as well get into it. We've got Senate Bill 22, and it's to revise certain provisions regarding pesticide registration, pesticide application, and enforcement of pesticide laws. So I'll ask for proponent testimony.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Taya Runyon. I'm the Director of the Ag Services Division for the South Dakota Department of Ag. I am here this morning to ask for your support of Senate Bill 22, which is a comprehensive policy update of our state pesticide statutes. I did prepare an annotated copy when we started walking through this bill on the Senate side, and I apologize if it caused any confusion. I did forget to make the changes when that was amended on the Senate side. So if you are following along with the annotated version, just note that Section 16 was amended out. That was something that we worked with the State's Attorneys Association with to make sure that there was no super priority issues when referring these cases to the State's Attorney's Office. There was also a minor amendment that changed 30 days to 15 days when we were talking about the criminal sanctions. So if you're following along, those changes have been made and they are part of the actual bill that you'll be voting on today.
Okay, so Senate, so Section 16 is out. The others would be renumbered then.
Correct.
We look forward. Okay,
yep.
Thank you.
And I have both versions with me, so if you ask questions, I can accommodate whatever version you're working from.
All right, great. Thank you.
So the Department of Ag works through a cooperative agreement with the EPA to act as the agency that's responsible for enforcement of federal pesticide laws. We've been working to incorporate some new EPA regulations into our certification and training plan, and Senate Bill 22 updates our state law in accordance with those requirements so that we can continue to be that primary enforcement agency for the federal statutes. Updates include a minimum age of 18 for both private and commercial applicators and a new category for soil fumigation and non-soil fumigation. Several sections of the bill clarify the three enforcement options that we have available to us if there's been a violation of state or federal law, and then talks a little bit about how we can go about imposing those sanctions or obtaining compliance with the law. The bill clarifies that Class 2 misdemeanor criminal sanctions would now be referred to the local state's attorney for prosecution. This is just kind of clarifying that process and making sure that the law reflects what the procedure would be. This is similar to other sections in the code where we talk about criminal sanctions being referred over to the SA's office. As I mentioned, we did work with the state's attorney's office to make sure that there was no super priority that was implied in that language. This bill also clarifies the current practice that civil sanctions that do have a penalty up to $5,000 per violation is something that the department pursues in circuit court. The final judgment is issued by a circuit court judge, and we don't have to do criminal penalties in order to access those civil penalties. We also clarified in the statute that any fines that are levied by the circuit court is deposited into the general fund. That's not something new. That's just what the process is, and LRC recommended that we clearly note in the statute where that money goes. Lastly, in terms of sanctions, the bill clarifies and actually expands the violations that are subject to administrative sanctions, such as modification, revocation, or suspension of a license after there's been an opportunity for due process. There were some sections that didn't allow for that option, and we felt that in situations where a violation rose to the level of, say, a criminal sanction, we also wanted the ability to suspend, revoke, or modify a license. So we clarified that and moved things around so it's all in one place. At first blush, when you're looking through the statute, it does appear that sections related to enforcement are being repealed, but they are simply just being moved around to other sections for that clarity so that everything is in one spot. One example of that would be SDCL 38-2115. That language has just been picked up and moved over to 38-2144-16. Doing this, like I mentioned, just expands the enforcement options that we have available to us in situations where there's been a violation so that we can do the most appropriate sanction. We also provide for some express authority to enter into settlement agreements to obtain compliance. This is in line with the department's current practice of issuing settlement agreements, and we just wanted to make sure that that was clear. We have the express authority to do that in statute. In line with SB 51 from last year, which does make settlement agreements a public record, we do then disclose those if we get the open record request. We are proposing some additional policy changes that serve to assist individuals who are impacted by pesticide drift or other damage, and then clarify the department's role in our investigation process and how we go about conducting those investigations. The bill clarifies what exactly is reported to the department. It expands the type of pesticide incidents that can be reported to the department. The previous language limited it limited what could be reported to just damage, and something that we heard from a lot of folks was that sometimes there are damages that aren't necessarily visible, and so we just, any incident such as you think somebody isn't licensed or there was something other than just damage to a crop, you can still report that and we can investigate. The civil claims for liability related to pesticide use is another section that we addressed, and we expanded the term, which could include economic damages as well as the physical damages. That's something that the department doesn't ascertain liability. We don't determine the nature and scope, but this section does allow folks who are impacted when they pursue a civil claim for damages, they can pursue a claim for other things besides just the physical damage. We've also included a notice provision. That intent of a notice provision creates an opportunity to start a discussion with people who may be held liable in circuit court. And I've had the page pass out a copy of what North Dakota provides to folks if they need help providing that notice. This is just a standard form. They can certainly draft something themselves. They can have their attorney or insurance agent help them. But this is just a resource that's provided, and we would look to do something similar. Those notice provisions that we drafted are similar to the North Dakota statutes, and so this would be similar to what we would provide. One big policy shift that the department is making that we've spoken to many of you about is our One License initiative. Currently, applicators can sometimes hold multiple licenses at one time. If somebody has a commercial license, they may have multiple commercial licenses if they work for multiple employers. They may also have a private applicator's license if they have their own property that they want to apply to. And then if they work on the side for a government entity, they may also have a special government entity license, which is a commercial license, but it is specific to those applications. And from an enforcement perspective, we thought that was challenging. If we sought to take an action on one of those licenses, we ran into some issues where we were not able to pursue sanctions against all of those licenses. And then just from an applicator perspective, this creates a little bit more of a simple process. You don't have to keep track of multiple licenses, multiple renewal periods. So the way that we're shifting things around in the definitions of private and commercial applicators, one license per person covers every activity that they need to do. So a commercial license does allow you to still make private applications and follow the private applicator rules. And then that one commercial license would stay with the applicator and be applicable no matter where they worked, whether it was for multiple employers or even for a government entity. So we've made that policy shift, and we've adjusted some of the definitions to account for that. So that should be easier for applicators and a little bit more clear from an enforcement perspective.
What section? Is it section 9 and 10? Is that where you're...
So most of that is going to be in your definition section,
okay.
Where we talk about the definitions of commercial applicators and private applicators.
Okay.
And then some of the government stuff will actually come up in another bill that we'll have later in session. One of the questions that we've received most often is if private applicators can still continue to provide services for their neighbors. I know that that's a longstanding tradition in South Dakota that sometimes there's some barter and trade for application services. That does not rise to the level of a commercial applicator. Those private applicators would still be able to do that, and these definitions don't change that at all. The pesticide dealer licenses, which are required for anybody who is selling pesticide, restricted-use pesticides in South Dakota, that is currently tied to an individual and not a location, and it's currently non-transferable. We wanted to modify that so that it is tied to the entity, and that way locations would not have to continually get new licenses when they have staff turnover prior to an expiration period. So that just cleans up things a little bit and makes things a little bit easier for the pesticide dealers as well. The last item to note in Senate Bill 22 is the license renewals after a license has expired. Section 13 requires that a new exam be taken if the license is not renewed prior to the expiration date. This is very similar to how your driver's license works. If you renew prior to the expiration, it's just a renewal. If you let it lapse, then you're stuck taking that test again. So that's very similar. The pesticide regulations have been an ongoing discussion between the department and various stakeholders for several years now, and we're trying to strike a balance between the needs of all segments of the ag industry. We've had lots of great conversations, meetings with everybody impacted, and we have a commitment to continuing those conversations, but we're excited about the work that we've done so far, and we believe that Senate Bill 22 has provisions that all sides and all parts of the industry can support, and this bill helps allowed us to remain the primary enforcement agency for those federal laws. It makes it a little bit clearer and easier for everybody to understand and helps us meet our objectives for our program. So for these reasons, I would ask that you support Senate Bill 22, and I would stand by for any questions.
Thank you. Are there other proponents? Other proponents? Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Committee, how are you? Mark Winninger from the Sierra Club. I'm a registered lobbyist and chair for the state. It's been 3 years since we started talking about this issue, and I think we've come a long way. I don't know about you, but I'm very happy to see this bill in committee today, and I encourage you to pass this on to the floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents? Other proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents? Are there any opponent testimony? Seeing no opponents, I will waive rebuttal and go to committee questions. Representative Fink.
Commissioner Onion. And before I ask my question, thank you very much for giving us the annotated version. That was extremely helpful in my homework before this. So just a note to the other departments, they should take some notes on that because that was wonderful. My question is in regards to we're changing, clarifying that you can do civil without having to do criminal. And my question goes to, will that make it easier for the department, or in the past, have you run into situations where, you know, there was an issue, you did your investigation, found that somebody wasn't quite in compliance with all the rules, but it didn't rise to the level of a criminal case, so you know, were there fines assessed, or could you do that, or did you have to just say, okay, it wasn't a criminal thing, so we're going to let this go, but would this change that now so that they'd be able to do some administrative fines or the civil fines, or can you walk me through that if you're understanding the question?
I think so. Mr. Chair, Representative Fink, thank you for the question. So we do have those three options available to us for enforcement, and that technically could have been an issue. At least in my time with the department, it hasn't been an issue, mostly because we do have a robust practice of entering into those settlement agreements. We let people know what those possible sanctions would be, and generally we do just come to an agreement. We are able to assess an amount that people pay in lieu of us actually going to court for those things. We have had a lot of conversations with the Attorney General's office, who does help us with our litigation efforts, that if it was a case where we weren't able to settle and we would have to go to circuit court, that it creates a little bit of confusion about what the process would be if both would have to be charged. And while we were opening up these statutes, we took that opportunity to make it very clear that the criminal sanctions would be referred to a state's attorney to prosecute. The civil sanctions would be pursued by the department through our litigation counsel. And then the administrative sanctions could be handled through the Administrative Procedures Act, and the secretary would make that decision. So it's possible that that could have caused some major legal issues, and we took this opportunity to make it as clear as possible.
Second question.
Go ahead.
Okay, my second question, thank you for that answer. Second question goes for the application, the notice of pesticide damage. Will this, or a South Dakota version of this, be available on the website so that if someone has a problem that they can simply download this, fill this out, and then send it out to their, you know, neighbors for giving that notice out? Is that something that will be available for people?
Mr. Chair, absolutely. That would be available on our website. I foresee us also just automatically providing this anytime somebody were to fill out a pesticide damage or a pesticide incident report to us. We would make them aware. You know, we try to do a good job of communicating to people what our role is as the licensing entity and the regulation arm of this, that if they do have any civil damages that they want to pursue, that that's something they need to look into quickly. They need to talk to legal counsel or an insurance adjuster or a crop advisor. We try to encourage them to do those things to preserve the evidence and enforce their rights. And this would just be another tool that we would provide in that communication to say, here's something else that'll help you get that conversation started with the folks that are in your neighborhood, so that we can take a look at spray records. They can access the damage and make a determination whether they either accept liability or they contest liability, and you can make the decisions to move forward then.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Lesmeister.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, thank you for a very extensive bill that you brought that cleans up a lot of gray area. And thank you for cleaning up the licenses issue. That's been a pet peeve of mine for about 10 years. But my question goes there. On a dealer license, you said the entity will hold the dealer license, whether it's pesticides, fungicides, whatever. There's a lot of RUPs, different things got to be in compliance when you sell chemical. Who's in charge of that then when you say entity?
Mr. Chair, thank you. That's a great question. A condition of that pesticide dealer license will still be to have a licensed commercial applicator on the premises or tied to that. It's just that it would be transferable now. So as you have staff turnover and say one commercial licensed applicator leaves and another comes on board, you would be able to switch it from one person to the other, while the entity itself wouldn't have to get a new license issued.
Mr. Fellow,
sure.
Applicator, yes, commercial, but dealer license is what I'm talking about.
Right. So the Mr. Chair, the dealer license, it came with it some requirements for training and things like that. That dealer license was in the name of an applicator.
Okay.
Who was licensed, and now that would be able to stay with the entity, and you could swap out the names of whoever you have, so that you still have some training, you still have a knowledgeable person behind that sale.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Representative Overweg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to talk a little bit about the 30 days damage. Now, that my question to you is, that's private applicators, commercial applicators, your neighbor, everybody, it's 30 days after the date the damages have been observed?
Are we on the notice provision?
Yes. Notice of damage requirements, 382146 in Section 18.
Mr. Chair, so that 30 days, again, that's language that's coming from those North Dakota statutes, and then it's also currently been in our law that we do that. It's 30 days after it is first noticed. You might not see it the day that the damage occurs, but it is 30 days after the date that it was observed. And that's just from a timeliness perspective. You know, we've had situations where people called and they said, I think my trees may have been sprayed last year. Could you come out and take a look? At that point, you know, those products work their way through the plants, and we really don't have evidence readily available to us to make a good call.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I get that. My question was, does it umbrella, does it cover everyone, private and commercial?
Correct. That's not necessarily tied to an applicator. That's just whoever notices damage or notices any incident, they're able to let us know. Most of the time, it could involve both.
Yes. Representative Glanzer.
Just wondering, in Section 16, looks like it's all new. Could you explain a little bit what this administrative settlement might look like? And are there, who's all in the room, and what kind of outcomes might come from this kind of a conversation?
Sure, Mr. Chair. As I mentioned, we do have a policy that we issue these settlement agreements all the time. There's just never been express authority in the statutes to allow us to do that, that we've always operated under an implied authority to enter into those agreements to obtain compliance. So what our process looks like is that once we complete our investigation and we have those reports and records and all the evidence collected, the sample analysis results from the lab, we have a panel of folks from, you know, the registration side, who's really familiar with the product labels. We've got our administrative staff, we've got our inspection staff, and we look at those and we determine whether or not a violation of law has occurred. At that point, we kind of talk about what sanctions are available to us, what would be appropriate for that violation, and then we basically have a couple options. We can just go right to enforcement or right to sanctions, and we can file something in circuit court or refer it to a state's attorney and pursue the criminal sanction. We could just send a notice saying we intend to revoke your license. But oftentimes what we'll do instead, just to be judicious of resources, because it is cumbersome to file those lawsuits and things like that, we'll go to the applicator involved and we'll say, here's what we think the violations are. Here's the facts that we've established. And we're looking to pursue a case in circuit court. We will most likely be asking the judge to impose a fine of X amount of dollars. In lieu of doing that and having to defend that, would you like to enter into a settlement agreement? And oftentimes, you know, they'll agree with our assessment and the amount that we would be asking for. And in lieu of going to court and having to deal with that and having, you know, also risking the judge, can issue a fine up to $5,000 for any, regardless of what we recommend, we enter into those settlement agreements. So that's generally the process and what that looks like.
Sure.
So the person who's in violation is not in this room able to defend himself? That's not the mechanics of this?
Mr. Chair, at this point, they have an opportunity for due process. If they disagree with our findings when we present them with that settlement agreement, they can always say, we don't agree with your assessment. I would like full due process, and I'd like to proceed to the circuit court hearing. Or a lot of times we'll actually have people provide us additional information when they see that and say, would you reconsider? And it is truly a negotiation at that point. We've had people provide us, we looked at weather data from one place and they provided us the conditions that was on their sprayer and they were a little bit different, and that changed our perspective enough that we modified that settlement agreement. So there's an opportunity for a little negotiation if they bring additional facts, and then they also have the opportunity for full due process.
Good. Representative Fink.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going in a little different direction, there is a change in, I want to forget which section it is, section 13 of the bill, that talks about renewal of licenses. Mm-hmm. Talk me through what that currently is and then what that's going to change to, because I think that's probably something important to note for producers out there that might be listening.
So, Mr. Chair, this is just what I mentioned was similar to a driver's license. If you have a license and it expires on a certain date, as long as you renew it prior to that expiration date, it's just a renewal. If you do let it lapse and you go past that, that's kind of where you go back to square one and you do have to take the exam over again.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chair. And I'm looking at just like a private one, I guess it could apply to a commercial one as well. In the applicator exam, is the required dicamba training part of that, or is that separate?
Mr. Chair, you may have reached the point where I don't know. And I actually don't have my staff with me today that helps facilitate those things, but I'm not sure if those are done at the same time. And I'm not an applicator myself, so I can't speak from experience.
Okay. If you can get back to me on that, that'd be wonderful.
I can do that.
Anybody else? Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you. We'll go to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fink.
I move due pass on Senate Bill 22.
We have a motion to pass, second by Representative Lesmeister. Comments on your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank the department for coming up and bringing this bill. I think this is a really good cleanup and some good changes. They're going to help clarify these things moving forward. It's going to make things easier for producers, easier for everybody around this table. I think they've laid out all the changes. I've looked through everything, and I'm happy about it. So I would encourage a yes vote to send this down to the floor.
Thank you. Any other comments on Senate Bill? Representative Lesmeister?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thank you to the department. I know this has been kind of a painful task for them to try to piece this together the right way that's fair for everybody, and I just want to applaud them for that effort. And, I encourage a due pass on this. It's well needed.
Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none, the motion is due pass on Senate Bill 22. All in favor say aye. I'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representative Chase, excused. Glanzer.
Here.
Lesmeister.
Yes. Here. Yes.
Okay. Livermont.
Aye.
Marty.
Aye.
Mullally, excused. Otten.
Aye.
Overweg.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Hoyer.
Aye.
Wangsness.
Aye.
Fink.
Aye.
Bruner.
Aye. Motion carried. Senate Bill 22 will go to the floor with the due pass recommendation. I don't think we're going to talk about consent. Sure. Yeah. If you would hear that, Representative Fink, that'd be great. And with that, I think that covers our business for today. Anybody have anything to add for the good of the committee? Seeing nothing, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Motion by Fink, second by Overweg. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
No. Opposed. Motion carried. We are...